Well, hello, hello, fungi friends. Welcome to episode 11 of the Fascinated by Fungi podcast. Today, I'm going to be trying to answer one of my most frequently asked questions that I get when I'm live streaming, which is, what's your favorite mushroom? And I know that this should probably be a fairly simple answer, and maybe I should just have one mushroom in my pocket that I robustly say is my favorite, just to kind of answer people and get them off my back. But I find this question incredibly difficult to answer because it's changing and shifting and has a lot to do with how I feel and what season I'm in. And it really does kind of change as a function of a lot of things in my life. And I find it very difficult to choose just one favorite, especially because there's so many cool kinds of mushrooms that choosing just one seems so reductive. So today I'm going to try to run through some of my favorites and maybe sort of explicitly say a couple things that really are favorites and then a bunch of other things that are kind of in a shifting lineup of things that I count as my favorites. First, I just want to say this is my second week now using new audio equipment. So again, I hope that the sound is good. I've gone back and listened to some of my previous podcasts and been a little frustrated with the way the audio was coming in. So hopefully everything sounds good and you guys are enjoying listening to this and learning from me. It's been a fun experience for me to do these podcasts. And right now, a little life update is I signed a book contract and I am actually currently in the process of writing a book about mushrooms, which is really cool. It's been kind of the culmination of a lot of work I've been doing on social media. And in a lot of ways, I didn't work to monetize my social media, partially because I didn't want to become someone who, like every other post, was a sponsored post. I didn't really want to compromise the educational aspect of what I was doing. And I didn't want to kind of start licensing my content or somehow putting what I was doing behind paywalls, because I feel a real obligation to kind of give back to the world and to educate people, because I've been so privileged to get the education that I've gotten that I feel strongly that I should be giving back to people in the most equitable and accessible way possible. And because of that, I haven't really figured out a way to make money off of what I'm doing here. And so I was hoping to kind of get to the point where I could leverage what I've done in terms of building a following to get a real world opportunity. And that came along in the form of a book deal. And so I'm hoping in, I don't know, 15, 16 months, something like that, that I'll have some pretty exciting news to share about when my book will be projected for release. But I'm working with 10 Speed Press, which is a Bay Area based publisher. And I'm hoping things will go well and I'll be able to put a book out into the world that will be a really good sort of introductory book to get people to focus on fungi and help put them in context in a much broader biological perspective and make it make sense in a way that maybe some other books haven't done or other resources aren't currently doing. Also, to that note, if you like what I do in terms of talking about mushrooms and science communication, you can support me before the book comes out by going to my website and buying some cool mush merch. I also have a Patreon, which you can subscribe to, and I'll be posting updates of chapters and sample writing, as well as some recipes and personal stories that don't make it onto the rest of my social media. So anyhow, I hope you guys, again, are enjoying the Fascinated by Fungi podcast, and let's launch into what are my favorite mushrooms. So before I say my favorite mushroom, I just want to talk about my favorite fungi in general, because this is one that has been present through all of my life and is probably present through almost all of our lives too, but it's one that people forget about and minimize and don't really give due credit to, because it's so damn important, and that's yeast. And I'm talking about specifically Saccharomyces cerevisiae, which is the ascomycete yeast that ferments beer, wine, bread, cider, pretty much any alcoholic beverage or leavened bread is going to be majority fermented by Saccharomyces cerevisiae. So this is a single-celled eukaryotic fungi, It's in ascomycetes, so it's in the same phyla as like morels and truffles. Its spores are in a little ascus. It's just like a little sac that the spores are in. And Saccharomyces cerevisiae is what I did my graduate research on at UC Davis, and I looked at interactions between yeast and bacteria and how that affected wine quality and how it related to sort of a basic adaptive genetic mechanism that yeast have to dial in how they interact as community members with other microbes in their environment. A prion called GAR plus stands for associated, resistant to a glucose associated repression. And that's a story for another day. I'm thinking soon maybe I'll do a full fermentation based yeast rundown and talk about some of the graduate work I did. But for now, I'm just going to say Saccharomyces cerevisiae is probably my all time favorite fungi because it's so intimately involved in human beverage and food production. But now we're going to jump into favorite mushrooms, and I'll leave favorite fungi out of this for another date. So I get asked pretty much every single time I live stream, what's your favorite mushroom? And I have a hard time answering this because like live streaming, it tends to be very fast. People want quick answers. They want something digestible and they want to move on within like 30 seconds. And unfortunately, I can't give that answer easily because I'm verbose, I'm long-winded, and I like to think about things in a way that I don't just kind of like have a favorite and say it and go. Because like I said, this sort of is very a flexible, dynamic thing for me. And it's inherently hard to answer because my favorite depends a lot on what season is it, what habitat am I in, what is the general abundance of particular mushrooms, what is my favorite to like look at versus what is my favorite to eat. There are a lot of things to consider when you say what's your favorite. You know, it's not just quite like what's your favorite flavor of ice cream, which is, you know, maybe you have a top two or three and they kind of rotate between those. But generally people have sort of picked a favorite by this point in life and are not constantly changing. But for me, mushrooms are so dynamic and there's so many different kinds and so many different places that sometimes I go somewhere and have an experience that makes me have a new favorite mushroom or a new favorite experience. Or even like I often tell people, it's usually the mushroom that I'm sort of most excited to find that I haven't seen in like the longest. So for example, you know, I finished sort of the winter season. I got tons of boletes and porcini and mezzotake and all this good stuff. But I'm really looking forward to like the spring alpine season where I'm going to be finding morels and hopefully like the spring kings and some butter boletes. And I definitely would say that like, you know, morels and butter boletes are among some of my absolute favorites. But they're not my favorites, right? They are things that I'm very much looking forward to finding, but it's sort of a shifting, changing thing as to what the real favorite is. So I'm going to start by just talking about cultivated mushrooms, because those are fairly simple. You can pretty much find those robustly in stores all year long, or you can order kits or blocks that allow you to cultivate those mushrooms yourself. And these are mushrooms that I really like eating, just buying commercially and keeping in the fridge because they keep fairly well. Mushrooms, when you get them fresh, will usually last for at least a week, if not two full weeks in the fridge. There's some that maybe can last even a little bit longer if you keep them in the right kind of conditions. And again, I did a whole podcast episode on how to store, preserve, cook mushrooms. So you can listen to that. I believe it's maybe episode 8. I don't know. Go back and look. Anyhow, so my favorite cultivated mushrooms. Number one, it's probably lion's mane, Hericium arenaceus. And it is beautiful, white, toothy polypore. Mushroom has awesome flavor, great sort of almost seafood-esque texture and a little bit of that like seafood-esque flavor, although not really. Hericium has a fairly mild, fairly sort of distinct but mild flavor that takes on, again, the flavor of whatever you cook it with. So I really like cooking lion's mane paired up with like ground meat or tofu or eggs, just taking big thick slabs of it and cooking it in butter, maybe with some kale and eggs for breakfast or putting on a breakfast sandwich. It's really good if you batter and fry it and then toss it in sauce. It's just a phenomenal edible mushroom. And it's probably the number one mushroom when people say, hey, I don't like mushrooms. I'm like, you got to try lion's mane. It will change your mind, I guarantee you. Another favorite is maitake, Gryphula frondosa. That's an absolutely awesome wild mushroom too. So is lion's mane, but I like the cultivated versions of maitake. They're generally relatively inexpensive. You can find them easily at Asian grocery stores. It's really, really good in pretty much anything you cook. You can throw it in stir fries, you can throw it to eggs, pastas, pizza, etc. You can fry it, you can dry it, make jerky, you can do all sorts of things. Maitake is another one that has a fairly mild flavor. It's not super earthy, and I think really you could feed it to pretty much anyone who says they don't like mushrooms, and they would love it and be like, "What is this?" And like, "It's a mushroom." And they'd be like, "Oh, it doesn't taste like any mushroom I've had." And say, "Yeah, I know. It's really good. It's maitake." A couple other favorite cultivated mushrooms, enoki, Flammulina velutipes. So again, a wild strain that's been cultivated. All these cultivated mushrooms are saprobic, so they're decay mushrooms, and that's why they can be cultivated. Generally, it's very hard to cultivate nectomycorrhizal mushrooms. They go out of their way to try to make it work with truffles, but even then, there's a ton of challenges that makes it very difficult, and truffles are still very expensive and in high demand. But enoki end up being very thin little white mushrooms. They grow them in thick clusters. In nature, they turn orange and get kind of goopy and have these like velvety, called a velvet shank, because the little velvet base of the stipe is kind of fuzzy, basically brown. But in cultivation, they grow them in the dark under low CO or under high CO2, which forces them to kind of stretch out. So they don't bush out and get orangey brown. Then instead, they get really tall and white, growing out of a jar, and then they harvest them off. You get this nice thick cluster of very thin white mushrooms. Enoki are super tasty and really easy to cook with. So some of my favorites, beach mushroom, shimeji. I can't remember the name of it, science name of it. It's a complicated one. Anyhow, beach mushrooms are delicious. Again, you find them at Asian grocery stores. Those are some of the most just kind of versatile culinary mushrooms that are out there. You can throw them into literally anything and they'll be great. And also king trumpets, which can grow quite large. You cut them, make scallops. You can kind of like fillet them and turn them into cutlets. Do all sorts of cool things with king trumpets. The flavor's not the best by any means, but texturally they're really great. And they're really big, chunky, large mushrooms that give you a lot of opportunities to do cool things in the kitchen and use them as meat supplements or pair them with meat in interesting ways. So those are like five of my favorite cultivated mushrooms. Doesn't mean there's not more. It's just this is what I could think of as I was sitting down to take notes for the podcast. Some of my favorite wild mushrooms, and again, this list is not comprehensive. It does not cover everything I really love, and I was just sitting here thinking of more things that I kind of wish I'd put on here, but I'm going to just stick with the five that I have written down. I will say my five favorite sort of wild forage mushrooms to eat, and that would be Amanita villosa is my number one favorite mushroom that I am always hesitant to tell people it's my favorite mushroom, because Amanita villosa is fairly limited in range. It grows really here in like NorCal under live oak. It has toxic lookalikes. So the death cap and Amanita ocreata, which is the Western destroying angel, can both be mistaken for Amanita villosa if you don't pay very close attention to particular morphological characteristics of the mushroom. And so people can make a really big mistake looking for villosa. Generally, as a beginner forager, it's better to just avoid all Amanitas, because you can make a deadly mistake with Amanitas, but it's hard to make a deadly mistake with many other genre of foraged mushrooms. So I feel confident now in foraging for villosa, but this is only after like 5.5 years, 6 years of fairly intensive mushroom foraging, paying attention to mushrooms, looking at them all the time, and using a lot of community resources and going out with people that are more knowledgeable than me to understand the habitat and morphology of these mushrooms to feel confident in picking them. And even still, every year I find villosa and I'm a little hesitant to try it. So I'll fry up like a little bit, try one piece, and kind of go, "Oh, right, that's why I love this mushroom so much. It is sweet and nutty and caramelized and has a nice meaty texture. The stems and the cap have slightly different flavor and texture, and you can kind of play that into dishes. But frankly, like Amanita villosa is probably my number one mushroom that I would say just fry it up in like neutral oil, a little bit of salt, maybe finish it with a little bit of butter, and at most a little bit of thyme and maybe a splash of sherry. But other than that, it doesn't need anything. It is absolutely perfect on its own. It is so, so tasty. And it's just a really gorgeous mushroom. I put a screenshot of Amanita villosa as the kind of framing for this episode. And it's a beautiful sort of apricot, salmon colored mushroom with this thick white skull cap over it, striations on the edge of the cap, a hollow stipe, a sort of uniform vulva, the base of the mushroom. I've done some videos comparing the edible villosa to the toxic ocriata, so you can get some visual context for that if you watch my content on Instagram, YouTube, or TikTok. Anyhow, that's probably my favorite edible. Other than that, butter boletes are one that's an absolute favorite. Ptero boletus, they're yellow fleshed boletes that stain erratically blue. The pores stain very brightly blue. But butter boletes are amazing. I find them up in the mountains usually, but there is some species that grow on the coast in fall. And there's even other species of Ptero boletes that I haven't tried, but Ptero boletes prima regius is the one I've eaten the most of, and I really, really love that one. Just meaty, mild mushroom flavor, absolutely awesome. Morels, Morcella, are way up there on some of my favorite edible mushrooms. They're incredible fresh, they're incredible dried, they have great texture. The umami on them gets really deep and delicious and special when you dry them out. So just Morcella and morels in general are high up there for me. I'd say hedgehog mushrooms, Hydenum species, are also some favorites. I like them way more than chanterelles. They tend to be less waterlogged. They are easier to clean. They get a little bit sweeter and more nutty than chanterelles. Hedgehogs are really, really good. Black trumpets, craterellus, species are awesome. Those are also really good, fresh or dried. And I know this is more than just the five, but Lactiflus hygrophoroides is one that I find on the East Coast. That's probably my favorite milk cap, sort of rustler type mushroom. And that's another one that just like straight up fried in a little bit of butter is so, so good. And I think all the mushrooms I mentioned are ones that like unabashedly I endorse eating those fairly plainly because you can put them into stuff, but the flavor is just so good just on its own. I think black trumpets are one that like the flavor is robust enough it stands up to other things. But a bunch of the other mushrooms I mentioned, sometimes I just eat them straight up plain because they're just that good and they don't need much more done to them. You clearly can cook with them, but they're also just amazing on their own. So some of my favorite mushrooms to photograph and document. So this is ones that I don't necessarily eat, but I really like to find, and I kind of like jam my phone and my macro lens into them. Hydenellum, the ones that are, they're sort of tooth fungi, but they're not edible like a Hydenum or a lion's mane. They're more like a polypore thing that kind of grows in a rosette out of the ground. So they start at these little nubs, and often when they're young, they'll be completely covered in guttation, which is little droplets of liquid that often take on really cool colors from the polyphenols and other components that are being derived from the mushroom and from the wood. And it's really, really awesome looking. Hydenellum pechii is one. They call it strawberries and cream or the bleeding tooth fungus because it's this little white nub covered in these super red droplets, and people always get very activated by looking at that. I think it's a really incredible phenomenon. But there's other Hydenellum species too that have like orange guttation or almost kind of blue guttation. Super beautiful. So I love that genus. But Hydenellum pechii is definitely one that I'd never found and finally saw them this year under pine up in Mendocino and just absolutely fell in love. The Hydenellum pechii is my lock screen on my phone at the moment. Blue stain boletes are ones that I really love to find and document, cut them, draw on them, do all sorts of stuff to them because people get really excited about stuff that stains blue. It does not contain psilocybin, these blue staining boletes. Instead, it is a organic acid that seems to be oxidized in this enzyme-mediated catalysis way that when you cut the mushroom flesh or otherwise injure it, the enzyme gets activated and catalyzes the oxidation of this organic acid. Varigatic acid. I think there's some other organic acids that haven't necessarily been characterized, but they stain blue. One of my favorite genre that does that is caloboletus, this bitter bolete, and the outside of caloboletus is like yellow and kind of red, and then you cut it and it turns this like dark blue color pretty quickly. It's super cool looking. One of my favorites. Microheterotrophs, which are not actually mushrooms, but they are plants that feed on mushroom mycelium and get their carbon, draw their carbon from the mycorrhizal mycelial network that's underground. But that includes stuff like the incredible red, bad dragon-esque looking flower called a snow plant that grows up in the Cascades and Sierras in the spring. Just bright, vibrant red, huge stalk thing coming up. Looks totally alien. There's a bunch of other microheterotrophs that are all often cool colors or have really amazing textures and patterns. And they're plants that aren't photosynthetic, so there's no green part on the plant. So they have these like really vibrant colors, but then no discernible sort of green parts or plant-looking parts, which makes them seem very alien. And I love finding those as I'm like hunting for mushrooms too, because those microheterotrophs can be indicators of certain species and habitats too. So they're a great thing to pay attention to. And I love just taking photos of those because they're so cool. Slime molds is another one. Last week we talked all about slime molds and you heard me go on and on about how much I love them and how cool the sporangia are to photograph and document. Take time lapses of to jam a macro lens in. I don't have one of those incredible super macro cameras that can do Z-stack focusing, but like I'd love to get into that at some point when I have sort of more financial flexibility and maybe more time and patience too, maybe as I get older. And jelly fungi are another one, just those like tremella and pheotremella things that kind of like goopy mushrooms. I've always liked them. I always thought they were cool. I kind of like to jiggle them and mess around with them. But because of social media, it's taken on a whole different tone for what those mushrooms mean to people. And this, it's kind of one of the weirder things I do. I go around and I like finger fungus in the woods, and you know, it's intentionally very much a joke, and it makes interesting noises that sound a little bit like intimate human activities, and I'm aware of what it sounds like. But at this point, it's become kind of like a running joke between me and my followers of like, I post a video of me squishing around a jelly fungus and people get really activated and really emotionally engaged. And it's fun because it's something that like making that kind of content for me is really easy. It takes like 10 seconds for me to like jiggle a jelly fungus, as opposed to me trying to like set up a shot and get in and like talk about a mushroom or do something else that's like a little bit more involved. I can take a 10 second, you know, jiggle a jelly and get a couple million views on it. And so I love documenting them just because it's fun to kind of see people's reactions to it. And it's very polarizing. And maybe I think I talked a little bit about that in the mycophobia episode, but it is interesting to see how people either embrace or reject the noises in the anthropomorphization that happens with these jelly fungi. So they're certainly some of my favorite to document, even if it can be a little bit weird. But, you know, I have fun with it. So here's a category that you guys might not have thought of, but favorite mushrooms to smell. So this is a lot of mushrooms have aroma, and many mushrooms smell just like dirt or like the mushroom you get in the store. But many don't. Many have sort of surprising aromas that you might not have thought of before. And so I just want to bring your attention to a couple of these mushrooms that I really like the smell of. Number one for me is a candy cap. This is one you might have heard of because candy caps are fairly well-renowned, Lactarius rubidus. So that is a small mycorrhizal mushroom that often grows under like pine, Doug fir, even here under oak in Napa when it's raining enough. And it contains a quabalactone, which is a mouthful, but that is a compound that gets oxidized to a lactone called sotalon. And sotalon is related in structure to another lactone called vanillin. And vanillin you probably know from the flavor of vanilla. Sotalon is another sort of lactone that sticks around for a long time, has a really round, warm flavor, and it tastes like maple. In fact, it is the flavor of maple. Maple syrup contains sotalon, and that's why maple tastes like maple. Other things that contain sotalon are candy caps, fenugreek, the spice. So you can use fenugreek and candy caps in curry to give it a really nice flavor base. And sherry, so sherry vinegar, sherry wine, contains the same lactone, sotalon. So it's kind of fun to play with those ingredients all together and create something that has a really strong like maple flavor. One of my favorite things to do is just take a good bourbon or rye whiskey, drop a couple handfuls of candy caps into it, let them infuse, and then you get this really beautiful like maple flavor in your whiskey, which you can then mix like half and half of maple syrup and make a nice little like maple whiskey cordial, and that's just like the perfect little after dinner tipple. Has this beautiful maple flavor that just sits on the back of your palate in a very pleasant, warm way, and it's absolutely awesome. So the flavor of candy caps is so long, and the smell of that is also incredible. But you got to dry out the candy caps to really maximize that Sotolon flavor. And over many years, the smell will get stronger and stronger too, which I think is kind of cool because vintage candy caps are totally a thing. Another one of my favorites is the cedar waxy cap. So that's one that smells kind of like cedar, or like a description says Russian leather. And I don't really know what the heck that smells like, but it has this sort of like woody, very perfume-esque smell. It's when my friend Hart Singer like really keyed me into how much the smell of the cedar waxy cap is unique and awesome. This is a tiny little indescript white mushroom with wide space gills, but it smells amazing. And it's so cool to find that one. Matsutake is another one that's Tricholoma species. Morlanium is the one we have here on the West Coast, but it has this incredible sort of high note chemical smell that's reminiscent of like cinnamon and seafood and gym socks and all these kind of like funky, weird things. But it's a very unique smell. And I find it doesn't dry out or preserve particularly well, but it does kind of hang around if you pour sake over it, and then you can use that in rice dishes and continue to have a little bit of that Matsutake aroma. But a lot of it is something that's kind of fleeting. And so you have to eat them fresh to really appreciate it. And I'd even like to take, pretty much raw Matsutake, and I'll shave that on top of like hot miso or hot ramen and get that fresh Matsutake aroma. It's really awesome. Sparassus, which is actually one of the ones that cauliflower mushroom probably should have been my top five favorite foraged edibles. But again, it's hard to just pick a couple favorites because there's so many and it's always changing. But Sparassus cauliflower mushroom has an awesome, awesome sort of like slightly woody, acidic, piney smell that I really love, and that's part of the flavor that I really like about Sparassus too. There's also the smooth chanterelle. Cantharellus lateratus or something like that. That's one that I've picked, and the West Coast chanterelles do not smell particularly fruity. They smell like dirt, but this East Coast species really does smell kind of like apricots and Play-Doh. And like I picked a huge bag of it last year and was foraging, you know, for more, and came back to the car and was just like, whoa, the car smells like apricots and Play-Doh. It's really cool. It's a very fruity, fun aroma. So, and that doesn't necessarily last as you cook it, but it is a fun one to smell when the mushroom's fresh. So a couple of my favorite sort of rare/weirdo mushrooms. These are ones you might not know or like you've heard of, but don't necessarily think of as mushrooms. Cordyceps and Ophiocordyceps, there is such an incredible array of biodiversity and life and forms that these can take as they infect different insects. And just in general, entomopathic fungi are really, really cool. The ones that infect insects and kind of take them over and turn them into the fruiting body comes out of the insects. So the mycelium is growing through like the fluids inside of the insect to create a mushroom, which I just think is super cool. And sometimes they turn into little zombies and they crawl up plants and stuff like that. So I'm not going to pick a particular species because there's so many, but those are just ones that I find deeply, deeply fascinating. Zylaria are cool ascomycete fungi. Cordyceps are also ascomycete. So a lot of the weirdo stuff that I gravitate towards ends up being these sort of strange ascomycete fungi because they're non-standard and they're fascinating, and they just live such interesting life cycles that are a little bit different than just the sort of standard like produce mushroom, spore germinates, produce more mushrooms. These have like different stages of life cycle where they go between being asexual to sexual, and they look very different in some of these different phases. So Zylaria are often called the candle snuff fungi, but they have some really cool like different forms they take and biology behind them, where like early on they'll produce conidia asexual spores, and as they get older they'll start producing sexual spores. So one mushroom can live a lot of different lives. Dendrocolybia, that's a basidiomycete. It's a little tiny mushroom that grows on blown out rotten russulas, but it's a cool basidiomycete that can also do that thing of generating both conidia and sexual spores. And it's a little brown mushroom with a tiny little cap, almost looks like a mycena, but then it has these little nubs all over the stipe, the stem, and those little nubs are producing asexual conidia spores, whereas the cap is producing sexual spores. And I just think it's so cool. There's a basidiomycete that's doing both asexual and sexual reproduction at the same time. And it's sort of like a parasitic fungi that's growing on top of this rotten russula. I've got a picture of those on my Instagram if you want to check them out. They're pretty cool. Another fair, this one's not rare, but it is a weirdo mushroom, and maybe this is one I should have put in my favorite to photograph or document, but bird's nest fungi. So there's like cyathus and crucibola, and there's a couple different genera of bird's nest fungi. They're just like tiny little cups that grow on wood chips and on dead twigs and stuff like that. And they're usually covered in this sort of like jelly, gelatinous membrane. And as it rains, the rain starts wearing away that gelatin on top of the cup, opens up and reveals these peridials, these little like disc-like egg-looking things inside of the cup. So that's why they're called bird's nest fungi. And the water droplets will splash into the cup and splash these little peridials, eggs, out of the cup up to even several feet away, and that's how they're spreading their spores. And the different cyathus for some of the different genera have like slightly different strategies for how those spores are being spread through these peridials. But they're super cool and they're amazing because they can be everywhere all over woodchip bed and you don't notice them. But if you get down on one knee and have a macro lens and can take a photo of that, people freak out and they're like, oh my God, those are so cool. And you're like, yeah, they're all around you all the time under like your neighbor's rose bushes. You just didn't realize they were there. So it's all a matter of like perspective and scale when it comes to that kind of thing. Some of their favorites are like club fungi and romeria, these like claveloid mushrooms that are like look like underwater branched corals and just have like weird, funky, cool morphology, some cool ecology. Other weirdo mushrooms, hypomyces, so things that are covered, mushrooms that get infected by this mold. So it's usually a basidiomycete mushroom being covered by an ascomycete mold, and the hypomyces is covering the basidiomycete in its infecting the total surface and doing this sort of parasitic castration of the mushroom below. So it just gets hijacked by the ascomycete mold on top. And it's a good example of this is like the lobster mushroom, where like a base species of like Russula or Lactarius will get colonized by Hypomyces lactiflorum. And it'll usually go from being sort of a uninteresting slash inedible base species into being a more desirable edible mushroom because there's been a whole suite of metabolic and gene expression changes on the surface of the mushroom induced by this Hypomyces lactiflorum. So that's a really cool one. I love seeing that. And some of my bucket list mushies. So these are mushrooms that are favorites, but I've never actually seen them or found them myself, but I would like to, are Polyozelis, this blue chanterelle, which is not truly a chanterelle at all. I believe it's actually more related to polypores, but it grows in the Pacific Northwest, and it's beautiful, fuzzy, blue thing with decurrent gills, which is why I call it a blue chanterelle, but sort of a cluster of this like blue fuzzy mushroom that's apparently a pretty decent edible. It's relatively rare, so I don't know if I'd eat it if I found it. I might try a little bit just for, you know, say I tried it, but it's a really beautiful blue mushroom, and that's on my bucket list of things to find. And I will admit that there's probably a few blue mushrooms here on this bucket list because blue mushrooms are relatively rare. I've only found a handful, and that's one that I'd love to see. And I know it's not that hard to find. It definitely occurs in the Pacific Northwest. I hope to find that Polyozelis blue chanterelle someday. There's also the pink pagoda mushroom, which I think grows in like maybe Indonesia or somewhere kind of down like the Pacific Rim. But Podocerupula miranda, that's a really awesome mushroom that I'd love to find and document. It's totally unreal looking. And honestly, if you look it up, most of the photos of it are actually a CGI image. It's not a real image of the actual mushroom, but it is a real mushroom. And it took me a while to do some research to try to figure out, like, is this a real thing or is this just like a CGI thing? It's like, no, it's a real mushroom, but someone has done some CGI images of it that have just taken over the internet. So that's most of what you'll see if you Google the mushroom, but it's sort of like a long stalk with little levels of kind of pagoda looking cap thing. So it's a single stipe with like multiple caps on it. Looks pretty cool. And it's pink and looks really awesome. There's also the umbrella polypore, which is Polyporus umbellatus, and that's a crazy-looking polypore mushroom that grows in Appalachia on the East Coast, and it kind of looks like a central stalk with a bunch of like weird brown little Shrek ears coming off of it. Apparently, that's pretty tasty. And in theory, I think you could culture it, but I don't know if anyone really successfully has. But I'd love to see that in stores if people want to start culturing that. That'd be awesome. Add that to my list of favorite cultivated mushrooms. There's Lactarius indigo, just the blue Lactarius. It's not a very rare mushroom. It's fairly common. I just have never seen it. It is a milk cap that is bright blue and bleeds blue latex and is very photogenic, and it's apparently decently tasty, not incredibly so, but you know, looks pretty cool. I'd really like to find that. Maybe we'll get a chance to see that this summer. And the last one, and you're going to have to excuse my Maori because my pronunciation is going to be horrendous, but I'm going to try. This is the actual Maori name of this mushroom, but it was Wereway Kokako, which is the national mushroom of New Zealand, and it's Entoloma hostereri. I don't know. It's the blue mushroom of New Zealand. It's a super blue, super vibrant, absolutely awesome looking blue mushroom that it grows in New Zealand. It's endemic there, and it has become the national symbol of New Zealand as one of those blue mushrooms. It's on their currency. And when I was in New Zealand, I heard about it, but never had a chance to go find it. I think it's associated maybe with like some of the silver fern forests, and I didn't really get into those as much as I wanted to. But yeah, those are to the question I get asked all the time. Hey, Gordon, what's your favorite mushroom? And I say, well, this is kind of a longer answer than I really have time to answer in a live stream, because like you guys want something fast and I need to take like a full like 36 minutes apparently to answer the question, what's your favorite mushroom? So anyhow, I hope you guys have enjoyed this episode of the Fascinated by Fungi podcast. If you want to learn more from me, please check out my website, fascinatedbyfungi.com. I've got answers to a lot of your common questions. I've got some mushmersh. I've got discounts for mushroom kits and mushroom coffee and supplements and gear and all sorts of good stuff on there. If you're on the East Coast, I recommend ordering from Norsepore. If you're on the West Coast, I recommend ordering from Far West Fungi. If you're in Canada, I just started working with JBC Mushrooms, so you can get mushroom kits in Canada without the crazy shipping costs of trying to ship from the US. And I'm always on the lookout for more cool brands and other places to work with to try to get some discount codes to save you guys a little bit of money on cool stuff. Again, if you want to support me, you can subscribe to my Patreon or like get a cool t-shirt or other swag from my website. Please follow me on YouTube, on Instagram, TikTok. I have a Pinterest, a Twitter, a Twitch, all these different things. I'm doing my best to keep you guys educated and entertained, and I'm busy writing my book, and hopefully that'll be out in the not-too-distant future. But anyhow, let me know if you have feedback. Always feel free to email me, fascinatedbyfungi@gmail.com. I've got some exciting stuff coming up that I'll be telling you guys about on this podcast. And looking forward to doing more of these and talking to you guys next week. So be well, fungi friends. Sending you all much love. Bye-bye.